Srila Prabhupada ki, Shri Bhakti Vedanta ki, Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Giriraj Maharaj ki, Jago Premanande. Okay, so tonight we'll begin chapter 12, and we will go from verses 1 to 10, and we'll hear about how Lord Shiva desires to see the form of Mohini Murti, and the pastime of Lord Shiva seeing Mohini Murti and being bewildered by Mohini Murti. So text number 1, and we'll go to verse number 10. Shukadev Goswami said, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, in the form of a woman, captivated the demons and enabled the demigods to drink the nectar. After hearing of these pastimes, Lord Shiva, who is carried by a bull, went to the place where Madhusudan, the Lord, resides. Accompanied by his wife, Uma, and surrounded by his companions, the ghosts, Lord Shiva went there to see the Lord's form as a woman." Chaitanya Prabhu, you'd like to read that? Oh, sorry. I thought there was a purple. So. Just testing. My mistake. "The Supreme Personality of Godhead welcomed Lord Shiva and Uma with great respect. And after being seated comfortably, Lord Shiva duly worshipped the Lord and smilingly spoke as follows. Lord Mahadev said, 'O chief demigod among the demigods, O all-pervading Lord, Master of the universe, by your energy you are transformed into the creation. You are the root and efficient cause of everything. You are not material. Indeed, you are the supersoul, or living or supreme living force of everything. Therefore, you are Parameshwara, the supreme controller of all controllers.'" Chaitanya Prabhu, you like to read this?
"The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, resides within the material world as the Sattva-guna avatar. Lord Shiva is the Tamo-guna avatar and Lord Brahma is the Rajo-guna avatar. But although Lord Vishnu is among them, he is not in the same category. Lord Vishnu is Deva-deva, the chief of all the demigods. Since Lord Shiva is in this material world, the energy of the Supreme Lord Vishnu includes Lord Shiva. Lord Vishnu is therefore called Jagat Vyapi, the all-pervading God. Lord Shiva is sometimes called Maheshwara, and so people think that Lord Shiva is everything. But here, Lord Shiva addresses Lord Vishnu as Jagadishya, the master of the universe. Lord Shiva is sometimes called Vishveshwara, but here he addresses Lord Vishnu as Jaganmaya, indicating that even Vishveshwara is under Lord Vishnu's control. Lord Vishnu is the master of the spiritual world, yet he controls the material world also, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, Maya Dakshina Prakriti Jivatri Chacharacharam. Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are also sometimes called Ishvara, but the supreme Ishvara is Lord Vishnu, Lord Krishna. As stated in Brahma Samhita, Ishvara Param Krishna, the supreme person, supreme Lord is Krishna, Lord Vishnu. Everything in existence works in proper order because of Lord Vishnu. Adanta Taha Paramanu Chayantra Stham. Even Parmanu, the small atoms, work because of Lord Vishnu's presence within them."
What are the points here?
Vishnu is Sarva Karan Karan, all the power causes.
Good. Anything else? So, one of the main things we're going to learn in this chapter, as we've already learned through the Bhagavatam in several places, is the supremacy of Lord Krishna, or Lord Narayan, or Lord Vishnu, compared to all other personalities, including Lord Shiva. Now, Lord Shiva is an interesting personality because he has his own tattva. He is not Vishnu tattva, and he is not Jiva tattva. and he is not Shakti Tattva. So he is not in any other category except his own category. So Brahma Samhita explains it that Lord Shiva is like milk which is touched by tamarind or some souring agent, and then it becomes transformed into yogurt. So milk is transformed into yogurt. So Krishna or Vishnu or Narayan, when they contact the material energy, because Vishnu, even when he comes to this world, when Krishna and Narayan come to this world, they never contact the material energy. They're always in contact with the superior potency or the spiritual energy. But Lord Shiva, he is an expansion of Vishnu or Narayan, but then he contacts the material energy and therefore he has a different category, or he sits in a different category, which means he is Shiva Tattva. He's not a Jiva, and he's not Shakti, and he's not Vishnu. So he has his own category. So he's not as powerful as Narayan, but he's much more powerful than the Jivas, and he's much more powerful than any demigod. So he has his own special category, which is called Shiva Tattva. So in this pastime, as we've heard in the Bhagavatam many times, we'll see that Lord Narayan is superior to Lord Shiva. Now, I'll read from the Nectar of Devotion, just so you have an understanding. So it describes in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, or the Nectar of Devotion, that Krishna has 64 qualities. Now, the first 50 qualities, the Jiva can also have to some minute degree. So Krishna has 50 qualities which the Jiva can also share, but the Jiva cannot have them completely, whereas Krishna can have these qualities fully. Then there are 5 extra qualities which Lord Shiva and maybe Brahma can also have to a degree. And then there are 5 further qualities that only Narayan can have, and then the final 4 qualities only Krishna possesses. So we'll read the qualities which Lord Shiva can have to some degree. So the first quality is changeless. Changeless means he's like he has a spiritual body. Just like Krishna has a spiritual body. Krishna's body does not change. So Lord Shiva's body is like that. It is a spiritual form. It is not a material form. Although it is a little different because it touches the material energy to some degree. Now, although Lord Shiva touches the material energy, he does not become affected by the material energy. And that's an important point to understand when you understand Shiva Tattva. Even though he's in contact with this material world, but he does not become affected by the 3 modes of material nature. Even though he is called Tamasi, which means he is the Lord of Darkness, and he appears externally to be tamasic, or in the mode of ignorance, because he's covered with ash and he has skulls and snakes and sometimes he smokes marijuana and like this. So he appears to be somewhat tamasic, but there is no effect of the modes of nature. He is always situated in Shuddha Sattva, which means pure goodness. He's not affected at all by the 3 modes of nature. But he acts in this way to attract those who are in the mode of darkness, so they will come and have his association, and by having his association, they will get purified. So it says here in this chapter, when he approaches Mohini Murti, he's followed by the ghosts, the hobgoblins, the lower creatures who are tamasic. He only allows them to be with him so he can purify them. In one sense, you can say, like when Prabhupada came to America, and when he first began to preach, he was preaching to hippies. So people who are in the mode of ignorance to a great degree. Have you seen the video of the first Rath Yatra?
Yeah.
San Francisco, 1967. Has anyone seen that?
Yeah.
So you can see what Prabhupada was preaching to when he first came to America. I mean, people were hippies. And Prabhupada was dealing with people who were in the mode of
ignorance
to a great degree. And he lifted them by his association to the spiritual platform. And Lord Shiva does the same. He has these tamasic personalities, but by his association they become purified. So his first quality is changeless. Then, all cognizant, which means that Lord Shiva also is cognizant of everything in the creation to a degree. Not as powerful as Lord Narayan, who is cognizant of everything spiritual material, but at least to a large degree he is cognizant. He's virtually as powerful as Narayan. The third quality is that he is ever fresh. It means he's always youthful, like Krishna is always youthful. Lord Shiva always appears youthful. You don't see Lord Shiva as a old person. You don't see Lord Krishna or Lord Narayan as old. Always young. Nava Yovanam Cha. Purusham Puranam. Although they are the oldest, but always young in appearance. Such Chidananda, possessing an eternal blissful body. Their bodies are full of bliss. So he has a spiritual body. Lord Shiva's body is not material, like Lord Narayan, even though he comes in contact with he is. And possessing all mystic perfections. So all mystic cities, Lord Shiva has. The eight mystic cities. What are the eight mystic cities?
Anima, Lakima,
Prabdi. Okay, you've got five more. So what are the eight mystic cities? Okay, so he has eight mystic powers. So Lord Shiva has them fully manifest. Now, why is he not as powerful as Narayan? Because there are five qualities which he does not possess. These are the five qualities of Narayan. He has inconceivable potency. So his potency is even more powerful than Lord Shiva's. He has uncountable universes generating from his body. So this only happens from Narayan or Vishnu. That his body is the source of all the universes. The universes do not come from Shiva's body, but they come from Narayan's body. So Lord Narayan is even more powerful. He is the original source of all incarnations. So all the incarnations come from Narayan. They do not come from Shiva. He is the giver of salvation to the enemies whom he kills. So only Lord Narayan can liberate someone. Even Lord Shiva cannot fully liberate someone. And he is the attractor of liberated souls. So only Lord Narayan attracts everyone. Because even Lord Shiva is attracted to Narayan. And we'll see that in this pastime he becomes bewildered by Mohini Murti, who is Narayan, who is Krishna, the Supreme One. So, any points? So far.
I'm in doubt. When we talk about incarnations, what exactly do we mean by this? Or is it like Hari or Narayan's incarnations or the ten avatars or ten incarnations and so on?
What are you talking in reference to?
The third quality of Narayan which we were discussing, is the source of all incarnations.
Yeah, it means all the incarnations come from when the incarnations appear in this world, they appear through Vishnu.
Okay.
Shri Dakshaya Vishnu.
Okay. I mean, I'm trying to reconsider it because it's all from Krishna, right? So
starts from Krishna, then goes to Balaram. From Balaram goes to Chaturvyuha. Chaturvyuha goes to Narayan. Narayan goes second Chaturvyuha. Chaturvyuha goes Vishnus, Mahavishnu, Gavadakshaya Vishnu, Shiradakshaya Vishnu. From Shiradakshaya Vishnu, all the incarnations enter into this. TK? Any other points? The manifest, the unmanifest, false ego, and the beginning, maintenance, and annihilation of this cosmic manifestation all come from you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But because you are the absolute truth, the supreme absolute spirit soul, the supreme Brahman, such changes as birth, death, sustenance do not exist in you. So, Jamuna Jiva, you like to read them.
According to the Vedic mantras, Yatova Imani Bhutani Jayante, everything is an emanation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as stated by the Lord Himself in Bhagavad Gita 7.4. Bhumir apo nalo vayu kham mano buddhir evata ahankara idhya me vina prasadil astara. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence and false ego. All together these eight comprise my separated material energy. In other words, the ingredients of the cosmic manifestation is also consists of the energy of the Supreme Personality of the Godhead. This does not mean, however, that because the ingredients come from Him, He is no longer complete. Purnasya purnam adaya purnam eva vasishyate. Because He is the complete whole, even though so many complete units emanate from Him, He remains the complete balance. Thus the Lord is called Avyaya, inexhaustible. Unless we accept the absolute truth as Achintya Veda Veda, simultaneously one and different, we cannot have a clear conception of the absolute truth. The Lord is the root of everything. Aham Adirhi Devanam. He is the original cause of all the Devas or demigods. Aham Sarvasya Prabhava. Everything emanates from Him. In all cases, nominative, objective, positive, negative, and so on. Whatever we may conceive of in this entire cosmic manifestation is, in fact, the Supreme Lord. For Him, there are no such distinctions as this is mine and this belongs to someone else, because He is everything. He is therefore called Avyaya, changeless and inexhaustible. Because the Supreme Lord is Avyaya, He is the absolute truth, the fully spiritual Supreme Brahman.
Any points?
Lord is called Avyaya, inexhaustible. And whatever part comes out from Him, still is complete. Om Purnamada Purnamadaya Purnamadaya Purnamadaya. So He is already complete.
Anything else?
In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Krishna Prabhupada mentions, like if someone understands this word, this is a part of his comment. If everybody understands like everything belongs to Krishna, then there will be no fight on any personal position, because everything will see as relation to Krishna.
Anything else?
So it means if he expands to make this the whole thing.
Yeah, it comes from His energy. So the first thing that Prabhupada points out in the purport is that although everything emanates from Krishna, He is still complete, which is Purna. This is discussed in the Ishopanishad. So the living entity is complete, the material creation is complete, and the Lord Himself is complete. So everything emanates from Krishna, but then He does not become less. So He gives His energy. From His energy, His Shakti, all the creation takes place. But even though He creates everything, and it all emanates from Him, but then He does not deteriorate or lose His energy. Sometimes we become tired, but Krishna never tires. Although He does unlimited creation, unlimited expansion, unlimited potency comes from Him, but He never loses any of His potency. So this is His supreme nature, that everything comes from Him, but He still remains perfect and all-powerful. And His potency only increases. Although He creates everything and everything is constantly expanding, but He's always more powerful. Then Prabhupada points out that this is the philosophy of Achincha Beda Beda and Tattva, which is the philosophy of the Srimad Bhagavatam. That Krishna is everything, but He is different from everything. In one sense, you can say Krishna is everything, God is everything. But in another sense, He is separate from everything. So simultaneously, He is one with it, but He is different from it. Everything is Krishna because it all exists, it all comes from Him. It is His Shakti, but He is separate from it. So Prabhupada gives a simple example of the sun and the sunshine. The sunshine comes from the sun, but it is different from the sun. But still without the sun, there is no sunshine. So everything comes from Krishna. It is same as Krishna, but it is different from Krishna. So it's simultaneously one and different. That is achintya, beta beta tas, inconceivably. That Krishna is everywhere, because Krishna is in every single atom. That is inconceivable that he is everywhere, but simultaneously he is separate from everything. He is in the spiritual world, enjoying his pastimes, but simultaneously he is everywhere in the material world. So it is inconceivable, simultaneous oneness and difference. And then Prabhupada explains that the good in the material world, you'll see there is duality. There is good and bad. So everything must exist in the material world. Right? There has to be good, there has to be bad. There has to be positive, there has to be negative. So in Krishna's creation, everything exists. In the spiritual world, there is no duality. In the sense, there is no good and bad. There is only pure goodness. But in the material world, you have duality. So you have goodness, but then you also have badness. So that is because Krishna is complete. So everything must exist somewhere in Krishna's creation. So that's why we have the story of Ekadashi. Because the Purusha avatar, the Paapurush, Paapurush means the personification of sin, Paap. So he was being chased by the chakra of Narayan. Narayan was trying to kill him. So he ran away, and finally he came back to Narayan. He said, please save me. He said, why should I save you? You are sin personified. And it describes that his nose was one sin, his eyes were another sin, and all the sins in this material creation, they make up this personality called the Paap Purush. So the Lord said, why should I protect you? You are sin. He said, yes, but your creation is complete, so I must exist somewhere. And the Lord said, that is true. You must exist somewhere. So he said, on the Ekadashi, which is the 11th day of the waxing moon, and the 11th day of the waning moon, which was yesterday, he said, you shall enter into the grains and the beans, and anyone who takes you on those days, they will become infected in their consciousness by this pap, or this sin. That is why, as Vaishnavas, we avoid grains and beans on the day of Ekadashi, right? Because it infects your heart with sin. So if you accidentally break Ekadashi, which sometimes we do during the year, then once a year there is a Maha Ekadashi, Pandav Nirjal Ekadashi, and if you fast on that Ekadashi, then you get the benefit of all of the Ekadashis put together. So that's the next Ekadashi, actually. It's the next one. Well, I'm telling you when it is. It's on the house. Not next Monday, but the following Monday will be Pandav Nirjal Ekadashi. So if you have broken Ekadashi during the year, then you can follow it. It means Nirjal, means no water, no eating. So it means the whole Ekadashi you have to follow, like that. So usually many devotees do that. It's very good, if you can do it, very good to do it. And it destroys all the sins. Because Bhima is the brother of Arjuna, Yudhisthira. Bhima is Vrikadar. Vrikadar means alligator belly. He can just eat so much. So powerful, his digestion. He said to Krishna, I can't fast on Ekadashi. So Krishna says, okay, then you fast on one Ekadashi and you'll get the benefit of fasting on all the others. So that is that one Ekadashi, which is the next one. So if we fast on that one, then we get the benefit of all the... So somewhere in Krishna's creation there has to be sin. So where is sin? It is in the grains and the beans. And you see the whole world is in grains and beans. And then what happens? The whole world is sinful. And I've seen over the years, I've seen devotees who are not strict, they don't follow Ekadashi. And they eat grains, I've seen devotees do it. And they say, oh, it's not so important, you don't. And I've seen those devotees, they have some problems in their mentality. So we should be very strict on this point.
If you get sin, we break a Ekadashi, and that sin that you're ingesting, do you carry that sin until Bhima Ekadashi, or it doesn't take effect? How does that work?
I mean, it's in your consciousness, so it depends on how powerful your consciousness is. So if you're a advanced devotee, it probably won't affect you so much. But if you're not so advanced, then you'll notice. Like that. Prabhupada said that if we break Ekadashi, then the next day, which is Dwadashi, then we should follow Ekadashi.
Do you have to break?
You already did break. So next day you can do it. In some places it says you break on the, you follow on the Triodashi, which is tomorrow. Like that. So then you take rain stay and tomorrow you follow Ekadashi. So it does say that, actually. In the Gaudiya Math they do that. But Prabhupada said just do it on Dwadashi. The point is, do it either on the Dwadashi or the Triodashi. And then on the Pandav Nirjala Ekadashi, then you should follow it. But you'll see, because devotees, sometimes they eat grains which are not offered to Krishna. You know, they eat nachos or, you know, these different things, you know. So, or they eat bread which is made by non-devotees. You know, just get the soup by bread. And so then, that also affects your consciousness. So if you're an advanced devotee, it may not affect you so much. But if you're not, then Prabhupada says that if you eat grains cooked by non-devotees, your mind becomes wicked. So devotees have to be strict, because if you eat grains or things cooked by non-devotees, then your mind becomes full of material desires, you'll see.
Is it true that there's an exception if you watch them cooking? This one time I think Prabhupada was travelling and he had kachori.
Hot on the station.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that. Yeah, Prabhupada said that that nullifies the karma. But it wasn't like Prabhupada was saying, okay, just do it whenever you want to do it. That was like Prabhupada was travelling on a train in India for 24 hours, long train trip, nothing to eat. So Prabhupada on the platform, they were cooking hot kachoris. So they had Prabhupada to get some for me. So they brought, and then they said, oh, Prabhupada, but isn't that, you know, they cook by night. Prabhupada said, if you pay for it, that nullifies the karma. Like that. And then Prabhupada's point was, because you're in India, you have to see them cooking in front of you, hot. Because if something's sitting around in India, then you'll get sick. So, but it wasn't like Prabhupada was saying do it all the time. So, any other points?
I thought the fried thing you can eat.
What? What is it?
Fried things.
Fried things.
Fried.
You can
fried.
Eat it.
If you eat it, fried.
Yeah.
Green.
By the non-devotees.
If it is fried.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
If you buy it.
Yeah.
If you pay for it, then you can eat.
You're asking a question, or what was
it? No, this is what I heard. So I'm just asking if this is right.
So what is the question?
If it is something fried, and if you pay for it, I mean, not non-vegetarian, the vegetarian thing, if it is fried. And if you pay for it,
no, not necessarily fried, but Prabhupada says, you know, vegetarian food. You know, you're travelling somewhere,
yes.
Nothing to eat, and some vegetarian. Yes. The Prabhupada says, if you pay for it, that nullifies the karma.
Mm.
But it's not prasadam, so you don't want to do it regularly. It's like an emergency situation. But not like every day. Not like you're just sitting there eating fried food and watching the boxing.
There is normally, like sometimes on Ekadashi day before that, and after 2-3 days, one day we choose and do the Ekadashi. Would that be okay?
I already
said, you either
do it, if you break on Ekadashi, which was yesterday, then Prabhupada said you fast on Dwadashi, which is today,
okay.
Right? Or in the Gaudiya Math, because it says in the scriptures you should do it on Triodashi, which is tomorrow. I just said, do you want me to say it 6 more times?
No.
Either you do it on Dwadashi or you do it on Triodashi.
Okay.
Okay.
But they say you should not fast Ekadashi and Dwadashi, because you should not be fasting on Dwadashi.
Yes, that's why I said then do it on Triodashi.
And yesterday was Dwadashi, not Ekadashi.
No, yesterday was Ekadashi. That's why we followed Ekadashi.
No, it is written on the calendar.
Oh, God. Why is it so complicated?
Ekadashi was on Saturday.
Yeah, that was Ekadashi, but it was not suitable for fasting. Therefore, we fast on the Dwadashi. Whatever you say.
But the calendar is saying I am not.
Okay. Okay, where are we up to? Six. Okay. Pure devotees or great saintly persons who desire to achieve the highest goal in life and who are completely free from all material desires for sense gratification, engage constantly in the transcendental service of your lotus feet. So, Uddhava Bandhu Prabhu.
One is in the material world and he thinks, I am this body and
everything. He can do. Yeah, you're right. No problem.
Sorry, you are.
No, say do it in the bundle, but you can. No problem.
No problem.
No.
Well, we can talk about it for half an hour.
I'm sorry.
Someone read, please. Someone in this con, please read.
Unless in the material world, when he thinks I am this body and everything is preferred to my body's mind. Ato Mahara Shetra, Sapta, Itad, Dhanasya, Mapoyam, Aham Mamini. This is the symptom of material life. In the materialistic conception of life, one thinks, this is my house, this is my land, this is my family, this is my state, and so on. But those who are Munaya, saintly person, following in the footsteps of the Narada Muni, simply engage in the transcendental loving service of the Lord without any personal desire or sense gratification. Anya Abhilashita Somyam, Jnana Karmadhi Anagatam. Either in this life or in the next, the only concern of such saintly devotee is to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, they are also absolute because they have no other desires. Being freed from the dualities of material desire, they are called Srayas Kama. In other words, they are not concerned with dharma, religiosity, artha, economic development, or kama, sense gratification. The only concern of such devotees is moksha, liberation. This moksha does not refer to becoming one with the Supreme like the mind of the philosophers. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained that the real moksha meaning taking shelter of the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead. The Lord clearly explains that this fact while instructing Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya wanted to correct the word Muktipade in the Srimad Bhagavatam. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu informed him that there is no need to correct any word in Srimad Bhagavatam. He explained that the Muktipade refers to the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, who offers mukti and is therefore called Mukunda. A pure devotee is not concerned with material things. He is not concerned with religiosity, economic development or sense gratification. He is interested only in serving the lotus feet of the Lord.
Okay, so what are the points?
This shows the mode of a devotee who is interested only in devotional service or serving the Lord.
Okay, anything else?
Where is this mukti pada?
Last chapter also.
What's that?
Last chapter, last chapter. Also, mukti pada is there.
Yeah, it's I think the verse is from the 10th canto that's being referred to.
Okay.
So we could find the verse. It's a very famous verse. I just can't remember exactly where it is, but I think it's in the 10th canto. So for a devotee attains real mukti. So real mukti means that one becomes liberated and goes back to the spiritual world. There is no false mukti. For the non-devotees, they get a false mukti, which means they're not really liberated. Most mayavadis are not really liberated. Because liberated means aham brahmasmi, you realize you're a spirit. So if we actually realize we're spirit, then we transcend the material world, the material energy. So my body or a Brahma body can enter into the Brahma Jyoti, and he can transcend this material world. But according to the Bhagavatam, that is not factual liberation, because then you'll have to come back to the material world eventually anyway. The nature of the soul is to be active. Krishna explains in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. The soul cannot stop doing anything. Krishna says, even for a moment. It is not possible. So if you go to the Brahma Jyoti, there is no activity. There's nothing going on there. It is just consciousness or eternality. It is realization that we are eternal. So you don't do anything, you don't feel satisfied, because the nature of the soul is he has to do something. Every moment we are doing something. So, because the soul is active, real liberation means going back to the spiritual world, jivera swarupahoi krishnara nitya das, and eternally serving Krishna. That is swarup, or that is actual mukti, is to understand your eternal relationship with Krishna. So there are four types of liberation or mukti, which are accepted by the Vaishnavas. We can go to the same planet as Krishna, and then what else? You get the same form as Krishna, and then?
Shasti.
Shasti means?
Same opulence
as Krishna. And samipya, which means? You get the association of Krishna. So, shasti, samipya, salokya, and? Sarupya. So these four are considered acceptable by Vaishnavas. In other words, Krishna gives that mukti. He gives you his association, he gives you the same planet, he gives you a similar form, and he gives you the same opulence. So he takes you back to the spiritual world. That's mukti. Anything else is not really mukti. Because even if you go to Brahma Jyoti, you'll feel dissatisfied. Prabhupada says at some point you'll come back to the material world.
So there's a difference between Sayujya and
No, that is Sayujya. Yeah. Sayujya means impersonal liberation. You merge into Brahma Jyoti. But then you won't be happy and you'll come back and you'll open hospitals. Prabhupada says the Maya bodies, like they're not satisfied there, they have to come back and do something. So they come back into the mode of goodness and they do open hospitals and all these things. Any other points?
Brahma Jyoti is the effulgence from the body of the Lord.
Yep.
So, in spiritual world, everything is personal. So, is Brahma Jyoti personal too?
No, it's not. It's impersonal. It's the light coming from Krishna.
So, it's not.
It's not personal.
Spiritual world.
It's part of the spiritual world. You see, Krishna has a halo, so that is the Brahma Jyoti. Brahma means spirit, Jyoti means light. So spiritual light comes from Krishna. But it is not Krishna, but it's his Krishna's Shakti, his energy.
So that is present only in the spiritual world.
It's present wherever Krishna is.
So if wherever Krishna is, that is spiritual world.
Yeah. Prabhupada says it's like you go into the kingdom of the king, so you've gone into the king's kingdom, but you haven't gone into the palace of the king. So in the kingdom, you might be in the spiritual world, because you've gone into the Brahma Jyoti, so you're outside of the material world, but you're only in the kingdom of the king. You haven't gone into the palace, you did not meet the king.
Also, it means that the Brahma Jyoti is stressed all over in that kingdom.
Yeah. You look at the first canto of the Bhagavatam. On the first canto of the Bhagavatam, you see Goloka, then you see all the Vaikuntha planets, and in between the Vaikuntha planets is the Brahma Jyoti.
Mm-hmm.
So you're in the spiritual world, but you're not on the planet of the king. So,
okay.
So it's not equal.
Okay. And the other thing is that Sarvam Bhattacharya, he was really Mayavadi. But with association of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he became such a great devotee.
Yeah.
That he even I want to change the word from sickness to death.
Everything is by association. Mm-hmm. Just like your husband, by your association, he is becoming a great devotee.
What?
That's what he told me.
He told you?
So many times. Any other points? Okay.
I didn't know.
What did you say?
I don't even know when I told you.
Even I don't know when you talk. Okay. My Lord, you are the Supreme Brahman, complete in everything. Being completely spiritual, you are eternal, free from the material modes of nature, and full of transcendental bliss. Indeed, for you there is no question of lamentation. Since you are the supreme cause, the cause of all causes, nothing can exist without you. Yet we are different from you in a relationship of cause and effect. For in one sense the cause and effect are different. You are the original cause of creation, manifestation, and annihilation, and you bestow benedictions upon all living entities. Everyone depends upon you for the results of his activities, but you are always independent. So, Uddhava Bandhupuru. Are you read? You read, right?
I read.
Okay.
Yes, I'm special.
Okay.
You've been giving special benefit.
Yeah. Lila Mai, you can read.
The Supreme Personality of God says in Bhagavad Gita, Maya tadam idam sarvam jagat avyakta bodhina mastani sarva bhudani nachaham teshva avasthitaha. By me, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. This explains the philosophy of simultaneous oneness and difference, known as Achintya Bheda Vidha. Everything is the Supreme Brahman, the personality of God. Yet the Supreme Person is differently situated from everything. Indeed, because the Lord is differently situated from everything material, He is the Supreme Brahman, the Supreme Cause, the Supreme Controller. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha. The Lord is the Supreme Cause, and His form has nothing to do with the material mode of nature. The devotee prays, as your devotee is completely free from all desires, your Lordship is also completely free from desires. You are fully independent. Although all living entities engage in your service, you do not depend on the service of anyone. Although this material world is created completely by you, everything depends on your sanction. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Mata Smritas Jnanam Apoganamcha. Remembrance, knowledge and forgetfulness come from you. Nothing can be done independently, yet you act independently of the service rendered by your servants. The living entities depend on your mercy for liberation. But when you want to give them liberation, you do not depend on anyone else. Indeed, by your causeless mercy, you can give liberation to anyone. Those who receive your mercy are called Kripa Siddha. To reach the platform of perfection takes many, many lives. Bakunam Janmanam Ante Jnanamamam Prabhatyate. Nonetheless, even without undergoing severe austerities, one can attain perfection by your mercy. Devotional service should be unmotivated and free from impediments. Hasin Puki Aprahitata Yayatma Suprasidati. This is the position of Nirashita or freedom from expectation for results. A few devotees continuously offers transcendental loving service to you, but you may nonetheless offer mercy to anyone without depending on your service.
So what are the points?
Lord is completely independent. He can give mercy to anybody. Even if you don't serve, sometimes He can give you.
Anything else?
But the pure devotee is always serving Krishna the time, without any interruption.
Yeah, so the whole point of studying the Srimad Bhagavatam is to understand the difference between matter and spirit. This is spoken in the very first verse of the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam differentiates between what is matter, what is spirit, and what is the nature of both. So by studying the Bhagavatam, eventually we have to realize and we have to develop the spiritual vision that there is a difference between matter and spirit, and begin to act on the spiritual platform and not be attracted to the material energy or maya. Because the material world, the Bhagavatam has already explained, it is like a dream. So it is not real. Although we experience it, and we're experiencing something in the material world, but it's a false sense of reality, because it's temporary. And it's based on material identification, an identification of the false ego. So as long as you identify with the material world, then you're in maya, and you stay away from Krishna. But as soon as we understand we are spiritual, then we become jivan mukta, which means we are liberated from the material energy, and then we enter back into Krishna's service. So the Bhagavatam is teaching us to differentiate between what is matter and what is spirit. So, any points?
As I understand, this service is more important, loving service is more important than this seeker of charity.
Yeah. Okay. My dear Lord, your Lordship alone is the cause and the effect. Therefore, although you appear to be two, you are the absolute one. And there is no difference between the gold of a golden ornament and the gold in a mine. There is no difference between cause and effect. Both of them are the same. Only because of ignorance do people concoct differences and dualities. You are free from material contamination, and since the entire cosmos is caused by you and cannot exist without you, it is an effect of your transcendental qualities. Thus the conception that Brahman is true and the world false cannot be maintained. So, Mahamaji.
Right. Sri Krishna Chakravarti Thakur said that living entities are a representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's marginal potency, whether the various bodies accepted by the living entities are products of the material energy. Thus the body is considered material and soul is considered spiritual. The origin of them both, however, is the same, Supreme Personality of Godhead, as Lord explains in Bhagavad Gita 7.4 and 5. Bhume aho naro vayu kham mano buddhe recha Ankaritiyam me bhinna prakartir asura. Aparem itasto anyam prakartim vidhi me param jeev hutam mahabhav gayedam dhyayate jagat. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego, altogether these eight comprise my separated material energies. But besides this interior nature, O mighty Arjuna, there is a superior energy of mind, which consists of all living entities who are struggling with material nature and are sustaining the universe. Thus both matter and living entities are the manifestations of energy of Supreme Lord. Since the energy and the energetic are not different, and since the material is marginal presence, energies are both energies of Supreme Energetic, Supreme Lord ultimately is Supreme Personality is everything. In this regard, the example may be given of gold that has not been molded and gold that has been molded into various ornaments. A gold earring and the gold in a mine are different only as a cause and effect, otherwise they are the same. The Vedanta Sutra describes that Brahman is the cause of everything. Dharmadi Asyata. Everything is born of the Supreme Brahman, from which everything emanates as different energy. None of these energies, therefore, should be considered false. The Mayavadi's differentiation between Brahman and Maya is only due to ignorance.
Thank you. What are the points?
Brahmasamhita says, Advaita Machyuta Manadi Mananta Rupam Adhyam Purana Purusham Navayavmanancha Vedish. So, Lord is Advaita. He is absolute. There's no difference.
Advaita. non-dual. Yeah. So, as Prabhupada's explaining here, the Bhagavatam is explaining, energy is not false. The material energy is temporary, but it is not false. It is real. So everything in God's creation is real. But the reason we call the material energy false is because it is temporary. So all the forms, they remain for some time, but then they disappear. So that is the nature of Maya. Maya means that we think that which is temporary is real. But it's not real, because it will disappear in due course of time. So the Bhagavatam is trying to teach us to differentiate between matter and spirit, so we understand the nature of both. So when he becomes advanced in Krishna consciousness, he sees that the material energy is simply false. It is real, and when it's used in Krishna's service, it becomes spiritualized. So Prabhupada says, you put the rod into the fire, and then it begins to act like fire. So anything in the material world, practically, we can use in Krishna's service, and then that becomes spiritualized. Because ultimately everything comes from Krishna. But the definition of Maya is when something is not being used in Krishna's service. So if you use the material energy in Krishna's service, it also becomes spiritual. Because ultimately it comes from Krishna. So Maya is a state of consciousness. Maya means when I see something for my enjoyment instead of Krishna's enjoyment, that is Maya. That is illusion. But when you change your consciousness, you see the same thing, but you think this needs to be used in Krishna's service, then that becomes self-realization. That is Krishna consciousness. Any points?
Does it mean the Mayavadi think that the Maya is for their enjoyment?
Yeah, they may become detached from Maya, but they still have the ego that I want to be God. So they may become detached from the material energy, but they still want to be God, so that's false. That's false. Prabhupada says that is the last snare of Maya.
Okay, so they think that. I'm just trying to understand Mayavadi.
Depends how advanced the Mayavadi is.
Okay.
So, any other points?
But this reminds me of the second verse. That they whatever you see different from me is Maya.
Yeah, if you see it related to Krishna, then it becomes spiritualized.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so read the third paragraph. So Rohini, you can read the third. The one after that.
By me and my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them.
Underneath that, where it says Vaishnava.
Vaishnava is therefore?
Yep.
Do not consider the jagat to be the nitya. Rather, they regard everything as reality in connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Things should be accepted for the Lord's service and not for one's personal sense gratification. If one accepts something without attachment and accepts it because it's related to Krishna, one's renunciation is called yuksambharaja. Whatever is favorable for the rendering of service to the Lord should be accepted and should not be rejected as material things. The jagat should not be rejected as mithya. It is truth, and the truth is realized when everything is engaged in the service of the Lord. A flower accepted for one's sense gratification is material. But when the same flower is offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead by a devotee, it is spiritual. Food taken and cooked for oneself is material, but food cooked for the Supreme Lord is spiritual prasad. This is a question of realization. Actually, everything is given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore everything is spiritual. But those who are not advanced in proper knowledge make distinctions because of the interactions of the three modes of material nature. In this regard, Srila Jiva Goswami says that although the sun is the only light, the sunshine, which is exhibited in seven colors and darkness, which is the absence of sunshine, are not different from the sun, for within the without the existence of the sun, such differentiation cannot exist. There may be varied nomenclature because of different conditions, but they are all the sun. The Puranas therefore say, just as the illumination of fire, which is situated in one place, is spread all over, the energies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Parabrahman, are spread all over the universe. Materially, we can directly perceive the sunshine spreading itself according to different names and activities. But ultimately, the sun is one. Similarly, Sarvam Kalva Idam Brahma, everything is an expansion of the Supreme Brahman. Therefore, the Supreme Lord is everything, and He is one without differentiation. There is no existence separate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Okay. So, Prabhupada is teaching us the philosophy that Rupa Goswami has given us, Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhi Yukta Vairagya Ujjati. Yukta Vairagya means we use something in Krishna's service. Yukta Vairagya, that is renunciation. It is not for my enjoyment, it is for Krishna's enjoyment. Idam Krishnaya, Idam Namama. And when we do a jagya, we offer it something to Krishna, we say Idam Krishnaya, this is for Krishna. Idam Namama, it is not for me. So whenever we offer something to Krishna, that is our consciousness. We offer the bhoga to Krishna. We think, this is for you, Krishna. It is not for me. So that is yukta vairagya. Renunciation. Everything should be used in Krishna's service. Right? And then whatever Krishna gives us back, that is prasad. But nirbandha. Nirbandha means, I will not use it for my sense gratification. It will only be used for Krishna's service. Okay. Those who are known as the impersonalist Vedantists regard you as the impersonal Brahman. Others known as the Mimamsaka philosophers regard you as religion. The Sankhya philosophers regard you as the transcendental person who is beyond Prakriti and Purusha, and who is the controller of even the demigods. The followers of the codes of devotional service known as the Pancharatras regard you as being endowed with 9 different potencies. And the Patanjala philosophers, the philosophers of Patanjali Muni, regard you as the supreme independent personality of Godhead, who is no equal or superior. O my Lord, I, who am considered to be the best of the demigods, and Lord Brahma, the great and the great rishis, headed by Marichi, are born of the mode of goodness. Nonetheless, we are bewildered by your illusory energy and cannot understand what this creation is. Aside from us, what is to be said of others, like the demons and human beings, who are in the base modes of material nature, Rajagun and Tamagun? How will they know you? So Prabhupada points out in the purport that you cannot understand Krishna when you're in the mode of ignorance or the mode of passion. But the mode of passion and the mode of ignorance are not conducive to making advancement in devotional service. If you're in the mode of ignorance or the mode of passion, you can advance in devotional service, but it's very slow. In the mode of goodness, that is a prerequisite to understanding Krishna or to becoming Krishna conscious. Prabhupada said, goodness is the stepping stone or the springboard to pure goodness. So you have to situate yourself in the mode of goodness as a devotee. Without being in the mode of goodness, it's very difficult to advance in Krishna consciousness. And then Prabhupada says that we can only receive this knowledge from someone who is a bona fide guru. If you do not receive it from a bona fide guru, then you don't understand the philosophy of the Bhagavatam. Therefore, you must study the Bhagavatam under authorities who are presenting the philosophy according to the parampara system. We do not change anything. Prabhupada said you just repeat it in your own words, but the message is the same. There's nothing changed. Then you get the pure teaching, and then you become connected to parampara, and you become Krishna conscious. But if you receive from someone who is deviating, who is not representing parampara, Right? And then he begins to speak something different, then you will be misled. Prabhupada said, like the blind leading the blind. So you must receive from a bona fide guru. Any questions? Okay. You got a question?
Yeah, I think I kind of asked it last time, just a little bit. I was just a little bit confused with how, if, you know, devotional service and things like that transcend the relationship to material nature, then how, again, is it affecting whether we're doing things in the mode of passion or goodness?
Because you're in passion. So you're doing devotional service. Devotional service is pure, but your consciousness is not pure.
Okay. That's so the activity point. We're doing itself and being as devotional service, and that's fine. It's just how. Okay.
Yeah. What are you thinking while you're doing it? That's the point. You're chanting Hare Krishna, but what are you thinking while you're chanting Hare Krishna? Your mind goes all over the place. Okay. So that's not pure goodness.
So you mean goodness is like state of consciousness, not so much externally what we're doing?
Both. It means if your consciousness is in the mode of goodness, then everything you do will be in the mode of goodness. Mm-hmm. Whatever's inside comes outside. Mm-hmm. Right? If you're a passionate inside, then it comes out passionately. So mm-hmm. Is that okay? Mm-hmm. Okay.
On that, can you be passionate about some goodness? Like, if you're often like saying, what are you thinking while you're doing this service? What if you're thinking about a good cause where you can alleviate suffering from these people, if you're really passionate about it and ticking over and ticking over?
Yeah, that's a different meaning of the mode of passion.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So there's different passion.
Yeah, when we say mode of passion, passion's like a, you know, when people are, two people, you know, they want to get rich. So, you know, that's like passion. You know, I want to do it like that. But devotees were also passionate, you could say, if you use that word. We're very committed to our cause. So we're passionate about it, but it has a different connotation. Just like in Sanskrit, like the word nava means youth or young. Nava also means nine, the number nine. So the same word has different connotations according to how you're using it. So the word passion, we use it in different ways. So it has a positive meaning, but also has like a meaning that you have to be cautious of. So. Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay. So I have some exams to hand back. Not everyone's here, but I'll hand back to those who are here. Okay. And if you didn't do any exams, you can go.
Srila Prabhupada Ki.
Yeah.